Matthew chapter 2.
We're going to read a passage. Sounds like a Christmas passage. It kind of is a Christmas passage, but it's an important part of the story that you never hear at Christmas, ever. You never hear this passage on Christmas Eve, but it's so important to the Christmas story because it's a narrative about sort of what the effect of Emmanuel is on a person. Magi you hear after Christmas, that's the traditional post-Christmas story, Epiphany. The Magi story of how God is for everyone, not just for a small group of people. This is a story that is a reaction that a person has to Jesus being in the world and to Jesus giving us new life. And it's a really bizarre reaction. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and we've come to worship him." Well, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed. And then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. And Herod sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me that I too may go and worship him." When the Magi had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." Matthew chapter 2. So how's 2020 going for you so far? 2020. Going well so far for you? My sister's daughter, my niece Sydney, had a baby 3 weeks ago. Yeah, thank you. His name is August. I call him Lil Augie. And I'm not really sure if they appreciate that yet or not, but that's just the name I've taken to calling him. When people have a little baby, they can't help but to wonder what the future holds, right? Like, what's the future going to be like for this little baby? What's the future going to be like for us? Like, what's 2020 going to look like? You can't help but to wonder. Well, last week, we talked about how God brings new life. And the promise is, and this is why the Bible is called Good News, the promise is that God gives a message that whatever it is you're going through, and it doesn't matter if it's really difficult, it doesn't matter if it's a really dark time, it doesn't matter if you're surrounded by a storm, the promise is that God will give you new life. And that's why the message is called Good News. Jesus said, "Behold, I bring new things, I bring new life. If you trust me and if you listen to my direction." And last week, in answer to the question, well, how does that happen? God is in the world, Emmanuel has come, light into the dark, now we have new life, how does that happen? And last week we talked about two things. The first way that new life happens is that we need to get to know who Jesus is. Because if we get to know Jesus, it's like looking through his eyes and seeing the world in a whole brand new way when we get to know Jesus. When I was in grade 13, by the way, if you ever want to sound old to a group of people, say you went to grade 13. When I was in grade 13, I know it's weird, it seems like such a long time ago. I had struggles in calculus. I couldn't do math. Grade 13, I needed to get a certain average. I wanted to get into University of Western Ontario then. So I had a math teacher who helped me. And we had three sessions. And he sat with me and he helped me do calculus. And at the end of that, I just saw math in a whole new way and I was able to do it. And it was thrilling. Like, math is actually fun when you know how to do it, isn't it? But before that, it was just like so frustrating because it was just like a language that I didn't understand. And this math teacher helped me to see math in a whole new way. And Jesus, when he comes into your life, helps you to see things in a whole new way so that you can understand, because sometimes the things and the articles in your life just seem confusing. And that's the way life can be for all of us. We look at our lives and we just don't understand why things are the way they are. And Jesus comes into your life. This is the promise. Jesus will just help you to see things the way they are in your life. So how does new life happen? Get to know Jesus. Get to know the ways of Jesus. And secondly, last week I talked about grace. A new life comes into our lives, not only when we believe that grace is real, but when we experience grace in your life. If anybody has ever experienced grace in their lives, you know the new life it brings. And when we look at characters in the Bible, I mentioned a few last week. Here's a few other characters in the Bible. Matthew. Matthew was a degenerate. He really was. Like, Matthew was a tax collector who cheated his own people. You know, you can't get much lower than that. And then, the passage I just read a minute ago was written by the same guy. He became an apostle. Jesus said, it's not too late. I'll give you another chance. That's grace. And then Peter. Peter's a great example. Peter denied knowing who Jesus was because he was afraid for his own life. That was the night Jesus was arrested. Peter wouldn't even admit that he knew Jesus. Then Peter ends up being the leader of the church because Jesus said, it's not too late. No, I'm going to give you a second chance. Like, Peter was the first pope. The Roman Catholics believe that that same Peter was the same pope. That's grace. And then Paul. You could go through the characters in the whole Bible, and it's just one right after the other. Paul's another great example. Like, Paul persecuted Christians, and Paul tore down the Christian church, and then Paul became St. Paul. Because Jesus said, it's not too late, I'm going to give you another chance. And now cathedrals are named after Paul. And we name our kids after Paul. That's grace. So I talked about those two things last week. Get to know Jesus, new life comes. Understand, and then experience grace. And new life comes. And I can testify to those changes in my life. I can testify that both of those things became real in my life. And I experienced new life in those ways. And I know other people here could testify to that as well. Last week I also mentioned that there's a challenge. And that's mostly what today's about. That when new life comes into your life, the new life that Jesus brings, there's a huge challenge. And that's what that story was about. And sometimes that's why we don't hear this part at Christmas. Because you have this part of your life, and then you have this part of your life. We all do. We have this part of our life that is just pure struggle. And when we hear that Jesus is going to somehow come into your world and into your life and change that, it's like, yeah, that's good news. I'm loving that. But then we have this part of our life that we kind of like. We have these things that make us comfortable and these securities. And so when we hear the message that Jesus is going to come in and change that, it doesn't sound like such good news. Like, does that make sense? That's the challenge. When Jesus says, behold, I make all things new. Sometimes we don't want new. We want old. In the Bible story I read, it just needs to be part of the Christmas story. It's a story about how Emmanuel comes into the world and changes someone's life. Like, it's like newness exploded into this person's life. It affected every aspect of this person's life. It was massive. And what happened when the newness of God invaded this person's life might surprise you. On the other hand, it might sound eerily familiar to all of us. In that story of Herod, the new life that Jesus brought into the world is actually a challenge. And it was even such a problem, it was such a problem that it needed to be eliminated. I know that sounds odd, because God, the angel saying to the shepherds on that first Christmas Eve, we bring good news of great joy that will be for all people. But all people, as it turns out, are too challenged by what Jesus brings. So there's this bizarre reaction from Herod. Someone who gets the message that Jesus is born, and to him, as we can see here, it's anything but good news. And the reaction is surprising in some ways, but in other ways, it's eerily familiar. Just to remind you, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem. The whole Magi story is so important. because through them we see that God is a God for all people, not just a small group of people. And Herod asks, where's the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. And when Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. It's one thing not to care about the news. People hear the Christmas story in our culture. Meets with indifference sometimes. It tends to be a characteristic of our culture now that people hear Bible stories and Bible teachings, and there's a sort of apathy, a sort of indifference, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. Like, it's one thing to hear the news and just to not really care, but Herod cared. Like, he cared a lot. Like, he was really furious, was the word that comes later in that text. And so here's this character. He's the king of the Jews, and he cared a lot, except he's angry about it. He's disturbed. He's not filled with joy. And right away, we see the problem, because there already is a king of the Jews, and it's Herod. And now Jesus is coming in, and people are saying, Jesus is the king of the Jews. And Herod's like, wait a second. I'm the king of the Jews. You see, there's something about the new life that Jesus brings that is asking Herod to redefine his life in a radical way. That's what's happened. That's why he's mad. In the mind of the Jews and of Herod, he was the king. And Herod's like, hold on a second. Here's the reaction he has. When Herod realized he was furious, there's the word, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity. It's no wonder we don't read this on Christmas Eve. Kill all the boys in Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. That's the reaction to Emmanuel. O come, Emmanuel. Rejoice, rejoice shall come to thee. And Herod goes crazy because he doesn't want new life. He wants old life. So Jesus is born. God's love is in the world. And that means new life, and that means change to the order of society and of culture. And it's almost like it's good news for some, but not for all. But just think about that for a minute. That's not surprising. It's not surprising that it's good news for some and not good news for all. For instance, last month I watched a documentary that Ken Burns did. Ken Burns has done all kinds of different documentaries. He's quite brilliant as a documentary maker. He did a documentary on the Civil War. I don't know if any of you have seen it. It's 9 parts, 9 hours long. It's incredible. But what's more incredible than the documentary and the making of it, than the fact that it's 9 hours long, is the story of that awful war. 620,000 young men lost their lives in the Civil War. That's incredible. All American citizens, all young men. And the end result of that, as we know, is the abolition of slavery in the United States. But the reason that so many young men died was that so many didn't want that to happen. Right? That's why they fought. They were willing to fight against it. It was a new world. It was a new way of living. It was good news to people who cared about justice and people who cared about equal rights and people who thought that the black man should have freedom. It was good news to them, but it wasn't good news to people who had to give something up in order to bring that new life into the world. It wasn't good news for the plantation owners because they enjoyed the power and the prestige that they had. So much so that they were willing to fight so that it didn't happen. Do you know what I mean when I say it's like it sounds weird that someone would have this bizarre reaction to Jesus coming into the world, but in another way, it sounds familiar that people would have that kind of reaction to Jesus coming into the world. Here's another example. If the leadership of this church were to say, we're going to devise a system where we have 100 kids coming into this church every Sunday, 100 kids. Now, this Sunday isn't ample proof, but that's been happening here. I mean, we have an average of 35 children in church every Sunday, which is a lot more than we had even a couple of years ago. So if I were to say, let's keep building that in the leadership, let's keep building that and see what can happen, that we can have kids and that we can have young families, wouldn't that be great news? It would be, wouldn't it? But yet, when you have all those kids in the church, and when you have all those young families in the church, things change. Because kids are noisy, and kids are messy. And young families have different things that they like to do, like maybe different music, maybe different ways of communicating, maybe different ways of using technology. I mean, what about all the old traditions we have here? Do we understand the tension there? When you say, let's just build up something new, and let's just make it amazing, that can be threatening sometimes, because that means we have to give up stuff that we like. Or what about the Out of the Cold program happening on Peel Street in Collingwood? What an amazing thing. But what if we were to say, let's have an Out of the Cold program here? How would we react? Like, okay, wait a second. I understand that that's the right thing to do, and I understand that it's the just thing to do, providing shelter for homeless people. But wait a second, if this happens in our church, you mean every single night there's going to be homeless people in this church building? Like, I'm not sure how that's going to work out for us. And there's going to be a lot of volunteers. How will that affect us? I'm kind of scared by that on some level. Because there's a comfort zone that gets threatened when that kind of new thing and new life comes into our community. The whole Herod episode sets the stage for what Jesus grows up into. He's the Prince of Peace, yes. Comfort and joy, yes, to some. But he's also the disturber of comfort to others. And Herod was disturbed and even furious. Jesus gives hope. Jesus is the great healer. What a friend we have in Jesus, yes, but he's also the challenger, the pursuer of justice. He asks people to carry a cross. Will you carry my cross? So many people left Jesus at one point in his ministry because he turned around to them as they were following him and he said, you know what? If you're going to be my disciple, you're going to carry this cross. They knew what a cross meant. They knew the pain and the sacrifice. Like, really? Carry a cross? Some of them just turned around and walked away and they said, these teachings are too hard. That's what they said. What kind of good news is that? Just see that we have this part of our life and then we have this part of our life and we're all the same. We have this part of our life that is full of struggle and dark storm cloud. And when Jesus says, I'm going to come into that and change it, we're just praising. But when Jesus comes into this part that we like, and that's the comfort zone, that's the security, and says, if you're going to bring justice and peace into the world, you need to change some of that. The whole point of this story is that there is Herod in each one of us. There's Herod in each one of us, and we just have to see that. Jesus, the new life that you bring asks me to change the way I live in a profound way. Which, frankly speaking, is kind of disturbing to me, and I'm struggling with whether or not I want to call this good news. On Palm Sunday, Jesus rode into Jerusalem. And it's just one of the most celebratory, poignant scenes in the whole Bible. Thousands of people. Well, they're all there for Passover. So there literally were tens of thousands of people in Jerusalem. And Jesus, on a donkey, rode through the gate, the front gate of Jerusalem, and thousands of people recognized him as being King and Messiah. And they shouted, Hosanna. But then Jesus got himself arrested. And he stood in front of Pontius Pilate. And Jesus said to Pontius Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is not about money or that kind of power or prestige or social status. It's not about that. My kingdom is about defending the weak. That's who I am. My kingdom is about giving sight to the blind and freeing the oppressed. And then he went to the cross to prove it. And the people said, what kind of king is that? That's not the kind of king I bought into. What kind of good news is that? See, we all have that in us. We all have Herod in us. That's why it's such an important part of the Christmas story. I understand why you don't hear it on Christmas Eve. But it's huge, because when Jesus brings good news, we have to recognize that challenge. When Jesus brings a new life. And so what the story is a warning. The Herod story is a warning. It's a big heads up for us. Now, a warning isn't, please don't mistake warning for threat. A warning is not a threat. A warning is a good thing. Like, we warn our children. Like, if your five-year-old son is heading across the street and there are cars flying by, you warn your son. Be very careful when you cross the street. That's a warning out of love. Like, if your teenage daughter is getting into drugs and recreational drugs and stuff, you give her a pretty harsh warning. It's not a threat. It's like, I love you. I care about you. I want to give you a warning. The Herod story is a warning to us, because God loves us. Make sure you see the Herod in you. Don't forget what love requires of you. Now, we just had Christmas. Remember, here's the warning. Remember where Jesus was born. Jesus was born in humility. Remember the kind of people Jesus praised and the kind of people Jesus really came down hard on. Just remember who Jesus is, how he lived, the important things in his life. Now, if you're old, any old people here? If you're old and you just think, you know what, it's too late for me. Too late? It's never too late. Never too late. And sometimes we use that as an excuse. You know what? However God ends up judging me in the end, it will be what it will be, because it's too late for me to change. It's never too late. Never too late to change, because always remember grace. Always remember Scrooge on Christmas morning. One of the greatest scenes painted in any work of literature. Scrooge on Christmas morning, where he gets up after a night of warning, and he realizes he's been forgiven and given another chance. And throughout the Bible, there's stories of people who just thought it was too late, or they're too old, they're too bad, they're way too past the expiry date. And so many of those same people follow Jesus because he said there's still time, it's never too late. So in this morning, us together here, it's 2020. What does this year hold for you? Jesus says, take the challenge. Take the challenge, it's worth it. And the new life that Jesus brings is really all you've ever wanted. So take the challenge.